Blog Talk Radio.
Paperback Writer.
This is the Writer's Lounge, where we showcase new authors. This is show number 147. My name is Thomas Riedel, and it is March 4th, 2024. And co-host Terry Brown will be with us shortly. Brief intro to today's show. Today we have on Maggie Fuller, who wrote Saving the Ghost. And Maggie will be with us at about 15 minutes after the hour, wherever you are. You can find us on Facebook, The Writer's Lounge, showcasing new authors. Find the book reviews of all of our current shows over at thomasriedel.net. That's thomasriedel.net in the blog section. And the on-demand radio shows can be found there on the podcast page as well. Or go over to the Blog Talk Radio site and search for The Writer's Lounge or find us easily on a Google search. Our email address is writerslounge2020@yahoo.com. If you want to be a guest on the show and have your book reviewed, put guest request in the subject line and we'll get back to you. I've been doing book reviews for over 11 years now, and besides those reviews being posted on my site, I also review for Goodreads and Readsy Discovery. They both do a great deal to help authors and readers alike. If you're a reader of books and are looking for a good book to read, check them out. You won't be disappointed. Upcoming authors on the Writer's Lounge on March 18th, 2024. Paul Lamb will be here with his book, One Match Fire. It is about a lakeside cabin in the woods where three generations of men and one family go to find a place and a bonding that isn't always possible in the complexities of life. A grandfather, a son, and a grandson find a connection with one another there. And April 1st, 2024, it's to be announced, but we will have that coming up. We will fill that spot, I am sure. And on to the next segment of the show, which brings us to Writer's Topics. And this is where I introduce my fabulous co-host, Terry M. Brown. And I'm going to push the magic button to open the door to get her over here in the seat next to me here in the couch in our imaginary studio. How you doing, Terry?
I'm doing great. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty good. Everything's looking good here. The weather is in the 60s, and Well, I'm really getting kind of bitten by the spring fever, and I hope that where you are at, I'm sure you're getting temperatures a little bit higher than me, but have you been able to enjoy the ocean?
I have not been down to the ocean the last little bit, but boy, let me tell you, everything around here is starting to bud. My plum trees are blooming. My azaleas are starting to bloom. It is beautiful. I'm loving it.
Oh, great. Great. Yes, yes. You're a little bit sooner than us.
We're ahead.
We're still,
yes.
we haven't even budded yet. The trees are still bare, and I'm waiting for those buds. And I drive around a lot during the day because I drive for Uber. So I watch those trees, and I watch those first signs of spring when the flowers poke up and the buds start coming out on the trees. Of course, the allergies come then too, so then you have to worry about all that crap. So anyway, with our writer's topics today, we had discussed talking about audiobooks, and it's an interesting subject. You want to start it off and let me know what you think about audiobooks.
Well, I always have at least one audiobook going, because I am in a vehicle a lot, like you are, but I'm alone, or my husband's sleeping, and so I'll put, you know, earbuds in, and I listen to a story. So, you know, in our trips when we're headed, up to Duke, that's 7 hours of driving, and that's 7 hours that I can listen to a book. So I do like the ability to do that. I prefer to read, but when I'm stuck in a situation where reading isn't possible, I do like listening to an audiobook. What about you? Do you ever listen to audiobooks?
Very rarely. And the problem I do listen to it on my Kindle. I have a Kindle enabled reader on my Kindle. So I'm able to use Alexa here and use her to talk to me while I'm exercising on my cycle machine here. And, I really enjoy that. What I find, though, with audiobooks like that is that my mind begins to wander away to something else. When I'm hearing the voice, I'm not really connected as in being connected to the page. But what I found was some really interesting research, Terry, and I found that they're saying that audiobooks can be useful in improving memory retention and promoting good concentration. And then some research even shows that audiobook users can recall more information when compared to reading books. So I find it hard to believe.
I wonder if that's true for me or not. I feel like when I read a book, I get more information. I mean, at least that's the way I feel about it. But like I said, I enjoy... Now, what I don't like is I've gotten some audiobooks before where I've not enjoyed the narrator, and I found the narrator not to be that great. And then that makes it hard because I'll think this book is pretty good, but the narrator is making me crazy. Because sometimes they'll have like a quirky voice, or you'll hear a lot of breathing, and it's like, oh, I just don't like that. So.
Yeah, and the other thing I found out, too, doing a little bit of research on this, is that if you're reading a regular book as compared to like a Kindle, an e-reader, they are saying that reading a regular book, the old, the old paper from the tree book, that you have a better chance of retaining information from that than you do even on an e-reader. So when you take a regular book and compare it to an audio book, the differences change dramatically the regular book, you're retaining a lot more than you would be if you're listening to an audio book. So I found that interesting, and I still don't know quite how that works, but according to a professor of psychology at James Madison University, David Daniel, he probably knows a lot more about it than I do, but he's done studies and stuff. But I find this whole thing with reading a little bit disturbing, because I really don't think that that we're really, I don't know. I know we did a show a couple of shows back where we were talking about the number of readers that are out there and how that has fluctuated over the years. But I really have a hard time believing that there's not really a lot of people reading books anymore.
Although they are showing that this new young generation, the ones that are currently in high school and college age, are reading, and they're not just reading, but they're reading actual books. Like they don't want the Kindle book. They want the book in their hand.
Oh.
So that's interesting.
Yeah, and it wouldn't work for me because I read close to, 30, 40 books a year, and do my reviews. I would have no place for them in my house, so they have to go on an e-reader. Yeah. So that whole concept of, the audiobooks, I think, too, a lot of people that are on long trips or people that commute long distances every day,
yes,
you would use them in their car. But then, of course, you've got to pay attention to the road, and that, of course,
depend a lot on what your commute is like. So around here, like when I'm going our 3 hours to go up to my husband's doctor's appointments, for 90% of that, it is a straight shot, no hills, no curves, out on the highway that's not very crowded. But when I get into the city, I tend to turn it off because now I'm too busy paying attention to, is the car coming over? Where's my exit? You know, and then I'm not listening anymore. So, I think it would depend a lot on, like, when during your car ride. Like, if I were in Washington, D.C. in that traffic, there's no way I could be listening to an audiobook.
Right, or in York City. I've been there, too, and it's a white-knuckle drive. You can't really be listening to audiobooks, and you're driving on in that kind of traffic.
No, my husband drove us. My husband drove us through New York City. He was driving, and I was white-knuckled and couldn't have listened to an audiobook as the passenger. So,
yeah, one thing I do enjoy is when the actual author does the reading. Now, I wanted to ask you, are your books on audio?
So, no, although I am currently thinking of getting Daughters of Green Mountain Gap in audio. I will be talking with the narrator that I've chosen later this week, so I may have an announcement not too long from now.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well,
so
anyway,
excited about that.
Yeah. Well, anyway, let's get on to our next segment, which is guest author intro and interview. And of course, today we have Maggie Fuller. She'll be on shortly, and she wrote Saving the Ghost. And I want to remind everybody out there, if you're listening live out there to the show, you can call in. Very few people ever do, but if you'd like to give us a call, we'd love to hear from you. Area code 914-219-0868. That's area code 914-219-0868. And my review of Saving the Ghost. Ellen McManus was the victim of rape by her father when she was a child. At 17 years of age, she moved on in her life, putting distance between her and her abusive parents, but she decided not to tell anyone except for her best friend and her husband regarding the horrors that she suffered as a child. She was able to maintain a successful career, and she also enjoyed good relationships with friends and others. When her father died, she is forced back into family fold, and the traumatic memories of her childhood are brought back to the surface. This proves to be too much for Ellen, and it puts her on a path to total and complete destruction. Out of desperation, she confides in her elderly Aunt Mercy, who was there for her as a child. She hopes that Mercy will heal her emotional wounds, but she soon finds out that Mercy is keeping horrible secrets of her own. When Ellen learns of what Mercy kept secret and has lived with all through the years, she is even more devastated, and her world continues to crumble all around her. She learns that her family has lived an unimaginable lie, and now Ellen wonders how she can survive it all. Emmy Fuller is a magnificent storyteller. Her characters are so real on the page that I could feel their heartbeat and their emotions gripped and saturated me. This is a story about the unbelievable pain of one woman and how she endured it all right up through her senior years. Ellen McManus is a strong and difficult woman, who I applauded and at times cringed at. The subject matter is raw, but so very real to so many of us. Family dysfunction is an understatement in this story. The author cranks it up a few more notches and makes this one A Tale I Will Not Soon Forget. This is definitely a top bookshelf read. It is a must read. And now it is our pleasure to welcome Maggie Fuller to the Writer's Lounge broadcast. And I will do just what I did with you, Terry. I'll open up the magic door and welcome her into our magical imaginary studios here at the Writer's Lounge. Maggie, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. So tell us.
I have a cold. I have a cold, so I don't sound like myself, but you wouldn't know that. So.
Well, you sound very good to me.
No, you sound just like I expected you to.
Now, I got to preface this before we get on to your first question. But Terry and I have this thing going on where we invite people on the show, and it ends up turning out that they become good friends, usually with Terry. I try to find authors that are going to be friends with Terry. It doesn't usually work the other way around. But
well,
I can tell you that Maggie lives in a place that I am very fond of. In fact, it's my second home. She lives in the state of Minnesota. So I just want to preface that first by saying I almost feel like I know you, Maggie. And whereabouts in Minnesota do you live?
Well, I am currently in Montevideo, Minnesota, which is in the southwest part of the state. I moved here 4 years ago from the Brainerd Lakes area, which is in central Minnesota. I moved there from the Twin Cities.
I had a camp up at the Brainerd Lakes.
A camp?
Yes.
What was the camp?
I was on Mille Lacs Lake, I should say.
You owned a campground, or you had a camper?
I had a campsite.
Oh, okay, that is common. Yeah. And where, if I can ask, are you in New York?
I am in Syracuse, New York.
Okay, so I lived there briefly.
Oh.
And I was also born in Washington D.C. So we're just all family here.
Very good. So we're
look at that, Tom. You have found yourself a buddy.
I did. Yeah.
So we laugh. Every time Tom brings someone on the show, they inevitably live where I live or live where I used to live or have the same publisher that I have or something. And so it's gotten to be a big joke.
Oh, that's funny. Well, instinct is instinct. And excuse me, I am going to mute myself for just a second before I cough in your ear.
Okay. So
while you're doing that,
Maggie, tell us about yourself. What are your interests in life? How were you inspired to write stories, and how did Saving the Ghost come about?
Wow, I think we're on a limited time, and I could go on for a long time about all of that. So I will briefly say that my professional life was as a graphic designer. I, did copywriting, worked with clients, of course, and when I retired early and decided I wanted to learn how to write a novel. And the first thing that I discovered was that a pretty sentence does not make a book. So there was a lot of unlearning, right? I mean, you can write the prettiest thing in the world, but nobody cares if that's as far as it goes. And
right.
Also dealing with copy material for commercial clients, everything is a bullet point. And a call to action. Well, I had to unlearn all of that and then learn how to write a book. So some people think that's an easy task. I took it very seriously. I think I worked on Saving the Ghost for probably 7 years and maybe, 17 revisions. I thought it was done at one point and it wasn't. And I thought it was done at another point and it wasn't. And finally, I connected with just the right workshop facilitator. She was a professor at Hamline University, Sheila O'Connor, who is a fabulous writer. And in that workshop, it completely changed how I wrote. And I did a residency up in Fergus Falls, and I rebuilt the book, and it was done. And based on your review and a few of the key words that you said, I always know I've done my job because it hit you where it's supposed to hit you.
Yes, it did, and it was a very special book. And like I said, it rose right to the top. Your characters are amazing. And as I wrote in my review, your characters really come to life on a page. I don't know very many authors who could do the magic you do in that regard. Is there a secret to your success? How do you get yourself into a character? Is there a process that you use?
Well, it's funny. I decided as I was writing this that I am in fact a writer, because originally when I started the book, I had an idea and that's what I was going to write about. And the more that I worked, the more that I learned and the more I rewrote, the more I was able to allow Ellen McInnes to come forward as her own character. I didn't even know Ellen McInnes was a character. And let the book unfold on its own. Right. You're all familiar, right? So
yes.
The joy for me in writing, even though this is a pain, this is a hard book to write on a lot of levels, and I think it's an important book, and I hope that at some point in its life it gets a real audience for those people who need to read this book. My purpose was to show a strong survivor and to see what it takes to come to a point of healing. Because this is a difficult life. This is not my memoir, but I did experience trauma as a child, so I'm familiar with PTSD and the process of healing, which can be lifelong. But I wanted to give an example to readers of someone who could make it through to the other side without being completely insane, because it's very dark and dirty. And I've heard from readers that it's really helped to transform their lives, which makes me very happy. So I think letting the characters come and have their own voices and their own way of being and not being afraid to tell the story that I'm presented with is what makes it so powerful.
Yes. Terry?
Yes. So you've written some other books and short stories. Can you tell us
Yes.
a little bit about those and then, like, what your daily writing life is like?
Okay, well, for those who have read Saving the Ghost, you might imagine that I wouldn't want to do something like that twice.
No.
So I thought I'd try my hand at comedy. And one of my favorite television genres is the BBC murder mysteries.
Mm-hmm.
With the chaotic cast and all of the craziness that goes on. So like Death in Paradise or the movie. I can't even think of the name right now. But anyway, I like the idea of that kind of chaotic cast. I like to write character-driven fiction. That's more important to me than the genre.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided, because I don't know, there's some idiocy in my brain, I decided that I would commit myself to a 4-book mystery series, cozy mystery series. And I'm a gardener as well as a visual artist and a writer. So I named the series Filthy Dirty Garden Gloves. And the first book is Blood on the Bridal Wreath. The second book is From Hot House to Heaven. And the third book, which is underway, is called Grave Gardens. My writing practice is when I sit down to write a book now, I like to stick to a schedule of from 8:30 to 11:30, write a chapter. And then I review it briefly, and then I print it out, and I read it out loud, and then when I get up in the morning, I start over again. And I like to just go through the book because these cozy mysteries are easy to write. They're not, they don't have a great deal of depth to them. They're just meant to be entertainment.
Right.
If I was to be writing a more serious book again, it would be different. I'd still get that first draft out that way, but then there would be a lot of reworking, I'm sure, unless I've become brilliant and didn't know.
You have. I'm sure that you have.
Yeah. We all wish that was true. Yeah.
And we all share some of your experiences, Maggie. There are,
well, I'm sorry about that.
Yeah, well, Terry and I have both been through kind of the ringer in life, and we come out on the other side of it. So I think your story resonated with me in that respect, because even though I can't relate to a lot of what your characters went through in your book, per se, but I can relate to dysfunctional families. And I think we all live in some degree of that anyways, unfortunately or fortunately, because we learn a lot from that. But getting to the dysfunctional family issue, what do you think are some of the keys to living more healthy in relationships? Just on your own personal reasons.
Yeah, you might want to talk to a professional about that. All I can say is what I agree with Ellen McInnes, the character, the protagonist in the book. She's not a likable character, but she's a determined character.
Yes.
For most of her life, she was determined to not let anything bother her, even though she was bothered. She just didn't admit it. And then she was determined to heal, to feel better. You know, some people want to be better. She just wanted to feel better. And the thing that I think is true for her is also true for me, and that's honesty. If you can't take the honesty that I have to offer, then you don't want to be in a relationship with me, because I don't have time or patience for all of the things that people do all day long that are listed in every psychological textbook that you can get from the library. I'm much more interested in enjoying myself and just being happy. And that was hard won for me. And I just think happiness is the best thing. So if you want to share in that with me, we'll be best buds.
Uh-huh.
But if you want to make me work, I'm not interested.
I always tell people that I don't have energy for games.
No.
That I just don't have the energy for games. So, you know, if you're not going to put it right there on the table, then I'm going to walk away.
Well, and that doesn't mean that I don't have compassion, and I think you would agree with that. But I am not – everybody's built for different things, and not everybody's for everybody. I am not built to help you with – the issues that you're struggling with, if you can't get to that point where you can own them and start to work with them. I'm not that person.
Yeah,
right,
which
is why you said to Tom, you should probably talk with a therapist.
Right. Right. Yeah. So Ellen is a very, as I said, very strong and difficult woman. Is there any part of you in her at all?
I would say that, you know, as a writer, everything you write is you in some way or another. I think in her case, it is the persistence, the determination. I think I was able to give her that. That's because I just, it was my life process to come to healing.
Right. Yeah, she made the story in a lot of ways. I really couldn't wait to turn the page to see how she was going to react, and that just kept me turning the pages. So she did very well in that regard. And Maggie, in telling the stories like the one you have written, the writers use narrative and dialogue to help the reader understand the story better. Which do you favor more, dialogue or narrative, and why?
Hold on again, just a moment. Quick moment. This cold is getting the better of me here. I like them both. I think they're both necessary. But narrative, unless I'm writing some other kind of book, and I don't know what that would be yet, narrative needs to provide a place for the reader to land, some ambiance, but most of that can be accomplished in dialogue as well. character interaction, I think, is what really gives the juice to a story. Now, I've written some short stories that are, or how to say it, but they're more a narrative, but they're from some individual's narrative. It's not descriptive. So there's always some action going on. And I think the scenes really make, really give the reader something to dive into. If you don't give them some action, you don't give them some conversation, they could just be watching television. I mean, they're not going to connect. You want to give them something that they can hang on to. And I love dialogue. Dialogue is easy for me because I'm a talker. So that part just translates effortlessly. But I did learn the value of the dialogue tag to bring the reader into how the speaker is feeling or experiencing the moment or where they might be. So that's always a big piece. I do some writing workshops, and so I always like to say to people that that is serious real estate there, that dialogue tag.
Terry, what is your feeling on that? I'm just curious. It just popped
in. Oh, yeah. Well, I love dialogue. I also find that writing dialogue is easier. I know that when I'm reading a book, if I start getting bogged down, it's because the narrative has gone on too far, and I'm the one that starts flipping the pages until the characters start to talk again. And then I usually miss something that I really needed to know, but nonetheless, I couldn't just sit and keep reading the narrative. So I love good dialogue.
Add to that and say that, I'm probably going to forget what I was just going to say, that another lesson that I was given for writing is if you write something that takes the reader out of the story, you haven't done your job. So
exactly.
Like you say, when the narrative goes on too long, I know there are people who are just in love with how they use language, but maybe not everybody else is that interested. You know, you might want to go write a poem because
right.
If I'm trying to read a novel or a story, what I want is something I can come away with that helps me in my life. I'm
right.
not reading purely for entertainment, even though I may not be aware of that. So that the sky was blue and the mountains were purple doesn't help me. But if it's cold,
a little bit of that gives you a sense of place, but too much of that and you've lost me. I've said a million times, and this is how I put it, is I don't want 3.5 pages describing the wallpaper.
No. And, you know, there's a place for that, I think, in certain kinds of literature. And I think there are readers out there who are looking for that. But that, I think, contains, some layers that not everybody is willing to tackle in their reading. Now, when you look at Saving the Ghost, if you look at it very closely, like even that first chapter, all of a sudden you go, aha, this is so deeply layered that everything I read in that first chapter will tell me the story.
Yes.
And it just repeats and it repeats and it repeats. But not a lot of people, it thrills me when I look at it because I feel very proud of myself because there is so much going on. But not every reader is going to get that. But I think the fact that it's there makes the story stronger for them.
Right.
I think it's a lot
to
do with balance, too, and how much you're using narrative and how much you're using dialogue. And to Terry's point, there's an author out there, I'm sure both of you are aware, Dean Koontz is who I'm reading now.
Oh.
And he goes too much into description, even though he's a great writer and he's well-established. Author, but he drives me crazy sometimes because he gets over descriptive. I don't need to know what the countertop looks like, what kind of granite it is or whatever, but he'll describe every little thing about it. And I don't really need to know that. I want to get on with the story. So those are very good points. And Terry, you got the next question.
Yeah. So, who is your favorite character in Saving the Ghost and why?
Well, my favorite character is Ellen, of course.
Elder. And why is that?
Because she is the one fighting. You know, she is the one with the courage and the drive. Even though she's like in the dark, she can't see anything. She doesn't know where she's going, but she's determined to get out of that dark room. She's just determined, and she's willing to break down again and rise up again. She's okay. willing. You know, by the time you get to the end of the book, it's like, oh, come on. Really? Was that necessary? But you know, it was, because sometimes it's that last piece.
Right.
You realize, I just can't hang on to this anymore. I can now. It's enough. And change your attachment to something else. Change your attachment to healing instead of all the things that have been plaguing you all your life. I love her. And I love it that she's not where I started. I actually started writing this book. When Mercy tells her story, uh-huh. that was the original beginning of the book. And somewhere in those 17 revisions, I found this character, and it just changed everything. It still thrills me to talk about it, because I think it's a really great book.
Yeah, and you've also got some really good twists in there too that really, really surprised me, and I loved it. Absolutely loved it. And this is what Terry and I talk about a lot. Are you an outliner, or are you a seat of your pantser?
Oh, the old, pantser versus something.
Pantser versus plotter. Yeah.
Plotter, yeah. No, I just sit down and write. I just write. I am an intuitive individual. When the three of us get together over lunch somewhere in the middle of the country, I will tell you the origins of this story and how I first came to write it. And I am an intuitive person. I absorb a lot of information from my environment, and I prefer to just not, and it's the same thing. I've become an abstract painter. I used to be an illustrator, more traditional style. But now I just let literally the spirit move me. Whatever is coming out, just let it come out. You can always edit. With painting, I say gesso is my best friend, because I can always paint over something. And with writing, you know, editing is a key. Not everything is precious. So if it's not working, just let it go. It doesn't matter. It's your block. It's not the block of the story. I love to write. It's just free-flowing, and I do get to a point where these mysteries, where I do have to write what's coming next. So I have like a spreadsheet, because even though I may not know the content of the chapter, I know B follows A. You know, this happens.
Right.
And
well, there's,
right.
there's a little bit more of a trope with the cozy mysteries, where
yes.
your cozy mystery readers expect certain things to happen. And so you do have to kind of follow along that kind of outline, or they're not going to be happy with what you've written.
Right. Right. With this kind of a book, honestly, I couldn't have told you maybe 6 revisions in what the book was even about. I was just so over my head in writing this thing. So, it just took a very, very long time. I went through structural edit. What's the word I want?
Developmental.
Developmental edit. When I started, I thought there was one kind of edit, and that was periods, and I didn't realize everything. But none of that stuck. It needed more knowledge from me. And I often say, and you've heard this from many people, you don't know what you don't know. But once you know it, and if you're willing to find out, you can come up with something pretty wonderful, because that's what we have inside of us. Every one of us, we're built to be storytellers. We wouldn't have words. We wouldn't have language.
We wouldn't have language, right?
No, we wouldn't have anything if we weren't built to tell a story.
Right. We've been doing that for eons. So, Terry, you get the next question.
Yeah, but before I ask the question, I'm going to tell Maggie that we may not live in the same state, but she and I are going to be best friends. All of her answers are just like, could you feel it?
Yeah, I can sense it. Yeah, I can. Yeah. You're gonna steal my friend from Minnesota away from me now, are you?
I am. That's what I'm going to do.
Minnesota.
So Maggie, Maggie, do you do a lot of reading? And if so, do you have any favorite authors?
Well, I have to tell you, I don't do a lot of reading. There are reasons for that. But one of my hands-down favorite authors is Eel Doctorow.
Say the name again?
E.L. Doctorow.
No, I've never heard.
I've heard of him.
Fabulous storyteller. Oh, my God. Yeah, so one of the great regrets of my life, not that I have very many, but is that I didn't get to meet him before he died. He's so fabulous with characters, and he's so imaginative. Pick up anything. Actually, the first book I think I read of his was Ragtime. And then I read a little book called, am I going to remember it now? It'll come to me. It's a little book that was one of the most profoundly well-written things. I can still feel it, and it's probably 30 years ago that I read it. Anything that he writes, it's interesting, and the characters are phenomenal. So that's really, I think, what led me to character-driven writing stories. And I'm sure there are other writers that I really love. I just, I have a head cold, so they've all been pushed out. But mm-hmm. E.L. Doctorow, hands down, is my favorite.
I have heard of him. I haven't read him, but I'm going to look him up because I really like character-driven novels also.
Well, and he is not a tidy writer. I mean, he doesn't write nice stories, right? He has messy stories, and so if you like my book, you'll appreciate the messiness that he brings as well.
Okay. So this is another topic we talk a lot about on the Writer's Lounge. Reviews, the good and the bad. What's your thoughts?
In terms of
how I feel
about them?
How do you feel about them, yes?
I don't care. I mean, I it's like with art. If you are attached to what people think about your work, it will change the work that you do. I go back to the whole happiness thing. I'm happy writing, and I hope that I do well. Some people are going to like my work. Some people are not going to like my work. There's a character, is it Lydia, I think, in my book, in Saving the Ghost, that's, just this awful person.
The
end, that people who don't understand this story and what it's about, they think Lydia is the best thing going. They can't stand Ellen because they don't know what this is, right? So if you've never had any shade of this experience, you want somebody in there who's going to make this make sense and put order to it and just let all of the ick and the scary stuff go away. So, and Lydia is obnoxious. She's horrible. But for people who don't know what this is about, they love Lydia.
Wow. That's surprising. That surprises me. But my one of my other favorite characters in the book is Mercy. I really like Mercy a lot.
Tell me why, what you liked about her.
It was just her, her ability to just continue living in an advanced age and, trying to, we all have flaws. So she had flaws, obviously. I'm not going to review, I'm not going to spoil the story here, but it was amazing. It was really amazing. I really liked her. I really did.
She's warm.
Yes.
A warm person. Yeah. And I love the relationship between her and Nellie Jane.
Yes.
And the other
yes.
one I loved was Jack. Jack was great.
Uh-huh.
And like I said, at some point when we meet in the middle of the country, we talk about the origins of this book.
Uh-huh.
There's an actual place where this story takes place that's about 40 minutes west of Two Harbors in northern Minnesota.
Oh.
And it is the place, it's the place where my father was born back in 1903 in a log cabin.
Oh.
And I didn't know about it. I stepped on the ground, and when I stepped on that ground, this story came up in me. Now, I don't know anything except that throughout the years, things have come up that have shown me that there's a reality to this, which is a little supernatural. It's a little, it's odd. And one of them is the Jack character. You know, he walks everywhere. Like he's in his 80s and he walks
yes,
everywhere.
Yes.
Well, it turns out the person who currently owns that land, when he first bought that, he was a Vietnam vet and he was kind of out of his mind and he walked everywhere.
Nice.
And
yeah,
he also,
I like that.
He also rebuilt that structure. I didn't know any of those things when I wrote the book.
Yeah, he reminded me of my grandfather. My grandfather did a lot of walking, and I could
yeah.
see him in Jack. And it was good. It was refreshing to see somebody like that who sort of, you know, he just kind of laid back, but he had issues too. But he was helpful and everything. And I really really liked him too. Go ahead, Terry. You have the next question.
Yeah. So how has publishing and then marketing gone for you with this book?
Oh, it's a disaster. So publishing, I decided when I was maybe three or four revisions back, I did at the time it was Twitter, and they had these pitch parties.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, okay, I'm done. So I pitched it, and right away I got the attention of a New York publishing house, an agent who felt that I really had something here. Now, understand, this is a few revisions back. He really tried to work with me. But again, it goes back to I didn't know what I didn't know. So he finally just gave up because he was looking for something I didn't even know what it was, right?
Right.
So by the time I actually finished the book and it was ready to go, I thought, you know, I'm 72 now. So 2019, how old was I?
5 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. So do the math. I don't do math. Numbers are not my thing. but I thought I'm just going to self-publish the book because I want people to read it if they can find it. I think it's important. But I came out of a marketing background, and I know how that works. So even, you know, these books that the big publishing houses push to you, only reason they're pushing those to you, they might be good, they might be mediocre, but they're pushing them because they have key elements in them that they know they can sell to a market.
Right.
And
right.
That's not who I'm writing for. It's not who I paint for. It's not who I'm writing for. I'm writing honest literature. So, So I don't have the time to constantly be on the computer to market. And honestly, for writers like me, independent people, there is such a dearth of individuals who are trying to get our little pennies to give to them to market our books. They're not getting anywhere either. So
yeah.
Right, it's, you know, it's like, I don't know how you found me, but the fact that you found me, and I don't know how many listeners you have, but if five of those people buy this book and realize, oh, this is the book that my so-and-so needs to read, then it's done its job. And
right.
So I appreciate you for trying to help without charging me. I'm not expecting an invoice in the mail. So
right.
That's great.
Right.
No invoices.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm also going through a...
Marketing can be difficult, that's for sure.
It can be,
yeah,
and I'm
I don't
going
know
through
how
a situation.
To get traction.
I'm going through a situation right now where I'm having some problems with this publisher. I won't drop their name on the air here. It's not wouldn't be fair to them or me because I'm still trying to get the project done. But I've learned some hard lessons, let's say, and I kind of knew it going in. And you made me think a lot about that and what you were just saying about marketing. It's tough, and there's a thing called trust. And it's really hard to develop trust in somebody you've never sat down to meet with. You've only talked to them on the internet, and they give you a good price, and you say, okay, let's go. And then you find out, you know, it wasn't so good. So anyways,
it's a problem. It's a big problem for us. And,
it is.
And I will say people, you know, give me grief because I publish through Amazon, and there are independent bookstores in my state who will not carry my book because it's published on Amazon. And it's like, you people are not punishing Amazon. You're punishing me.
Right.
And you're not giving readers an opportunity to have greater choice. I have nothing to do with this except that it doesn't cost me anything to publish a book on Amazon where other people want to charge me thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollars or, you know, here's your package. No, I can just publish it there. And then if somebody buys my book, I get a couple dollars. It's really great. You know, it all works out. But to punish me as an independent writer and storyteller because you don't like Amazon, Amazon took advantage of an opportunity like everybody else in this country does. I have nothing to do with that, but they haven't taken advantage of me yet. Now, I've heard horror stories from people. Nothing has gone wrong with me and my relationship with Amazon to publish my books. I will say I would so love it if people would actually write reviews, though, because I will say, like, one of the, I think probably the, maybe the first review was by someone I know, a writer friend of mine, who completely missed the point of the book. And it's like, I mean, she wrote a beautiful review, but at the end, she docked at points because she didn't understand what happened.
Oh.
It's like, okay, well, that's a case in a book like this where I can't give the reader more because then I might as well have just put out a curriculum, right? So you're going to get that sometimes where people don't understand what you're doing. That's okay. But I've had other people, I've got a friend who read this book. He'd never told his wife, and they're like my age, about what had happened to him as a child. It transformed him. That's what I want to know. Do you need to write that on Amazon? No, you do not. But that's what this book is for, and it makes me cry, and it makes me happy that I wrote it. But if people would just, I'm not a writer, they say, well, go ahead. If you know how to put two characters next to each other to make words, go ahead and give me a review. If you don't like it, you don't like it. But let other readers know what your experience is. You don't need to flatter me. I'll write anyway.
Right.
I told someone the other day that getting reviews was like standing in the backyard and expecting it to rain gold nuggets. That it's so hard. I'll have people that will tell me, I love the book. I'll definitely review it for you. And then it's crickets.
Well, it's not their job, right? I mean, their job is to be a reader. And then it's kind of like asking writers to be marketers. We ask too much of everybody now because this computer is there that makes everything possible. But no. I wish they would, but they don't have to. When I get a review, a really stunning review from someone, I'll usually put it on my website, which by the way is fefuller.com.
There you go.
Forget that. But I'll put it, I might put it there. I would just like people to purchase the books and read them. And in the case of the Cozy Mysteries, be entertained. And in the case of Saving the Ghost, be moved.
Mm-hmm. Very good, Maggie. Well, we're coming down to a little less than 5 minutes here, and this is the question we ask everybody that we end the show with. You've already given us your contact information, but this is sort of your asker moment. Anyone you'd like to thank out there for the successes you've had with the book and in life?
Well, again, in terms of the writing, I really want to give a shout to Sheila O'Connor. She's an excellent writer. Go look for her book, Evidence of V. V as in Victor. That's not what it stands for, but she's a very good writer. I have a writing group that I meet with monthly, and if you don't have one, you should have one, that are people I really trust, and they have been so helpful, so amazingly helpful. They make my work better. And then in life, I just really have to, I mean, there's lots of people who have popped in and out who have made it possible for me to keep going. But mostly I pat myself on the back for, you know, getting up every day and doing the things that will bring me to a joyful place.
Very good. Very good. Maggie, thank you so much for being on the Writer's Lounge. I'm going to be coming out there in July for my brother's wedding. So maybe I can contact you then, and maybe we can sit down and talk a little bit more about writing. And
well,
too bad
when,
I couldn't bring Terry along. What's that?
Yeah, well, when in July?
Where? Oh, he's over on the west side of the Twin Cities.
Okay. Okay,
so
yeah, we can figure that out. I'm only two hours from the metro, so.
Yeah. So we'll have to do that. And once again,
that
thank
would be
you.
Great.
And
just insist that Terry come along with you.
Yeah, I would like to do that. I would love to bring Terry along.
If you ever need to get out of the cold, you come here and visit me on the coast of North Carolina.
We haven't had any cold. We haven't. Where are you, North Carolina?
Yeah,
you said?
I'm on the coast of North Carolina.
Oh, where?
Calabash.
Oh, okay. I don't know. Was that the Outer Banks once?
Okay, yeah, the Outer Banks is beautiful. It's about 3 hours from me. So the Outer Banks is in the north coast, and I'm in the southern coast. If you've ever heard of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Oh, sure.
I am right above Myrtle Beach, South Carolina.
Okay. Well, we can maybe work something out if we ever have winter
again.
Honestly, we haven't had winter here, so it's not been terrible. Yes, please keep in touch. Terry, you've got my phone number. Feel free to call if you just want to chat. I'm happy to do it. And same to you, Thomas. And I just appreciate so much that you found me. How did you find me?
Found you on Readsy. Found you on Readsy.
But of all the books out there, how on earth did this pop up?
Well, because I like the subject matter, and it just piqued my interest. So
thank you.
That's how I do it. You know?
Thank you. You guys are great for doing this.
Okay, Maggie, have a good night.
I wish you success in your life. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, made another friend for Terry in the process of making another friend with me. So there you go, Terry.
There you go. So maybe we can start calling it the Friends with Tom and Terry show.
There you go. Okay. So on March 18th, we're going to have Paul Lamb on, One Match Fire. I won't read the description. Just tune in because we're running short on time here. And Terry, that was a good interview.
I thought so too. Very good.
Very good. So until then, on March 18th, 2024, Terry and I will see you next time on the Writer's Lounge, where we encourage writers and readers to keep the pen and eyes to the page and to let the story begin. Enjoy yourselves and be well, and have a good night.
If they asked me, I could write a book about the way you walk and whisper and look. Secret of the plot. It's just to tell you that I love you a lot. Then the world discovers, as my book ends, how to make